Thanks for Freddie for the nice introduction, and also thanks for coming. Today I'm going to share some progress that I'm very excited about, and if you're interested in some details of this talk, you can check those papers that we posted in recent 1.5 years, and there should be many more to come in the future. So let me start by thanking my collaborators. Firstly, Professor Wei Zhu's group at Westlake University with his postdoc Chao Han and Liang Donghu, and also a number of people at Parameter that I think everyone are familiar with, and also postdoc at Johannes Hoffmann at Weizmann Institute. All right. So this story is about physics meets geometry. And if you look back into the history of science, a lot of very profound work in both mathematics and physics actually comes from the interplay between these two directions. And here are just three most representative stories that I think everyone are familiar with. So, and this talk will follow this direction of research, that we will see how the interplay between physics and geometry can lead to very interesting results. And just in case that I give you too high expectations, the story today is very exciting, but will not be as exciting as the stories of those three giants. But I should emphasize that it's really just a starting of this very exciting journey. There are a lot of very wonderful things to be discovered in the future. All right, so this is the outline of this talk. So I will start with the physics side. I will introduce what is critical phenomenon and what is conformal field theory. And then I will go to the geometry side and talk about what is non-commutative geometry, and in particular, what is the so-called fuzzy sphere. And the last part is that I will have those two things mixed together and tell you that how we make use of the so-called fuzzy sphere to study conformal field theories. All right, so let me start with a critical phenomenon. So the first critical phenomenon that ever studied in human history was this so-called liquid gas transition, which happens in our daily life. And as we know that there's a phase transition, a first order phase transition between the liquid and the gas. And this first order phase transition and has some critical point. And that critical point was first studied by this French gentleman 2 centuries ago. And later, people, particularly in condensed matter community, have discovered many different type of phase transitions, or in generally speaking, critical phenomenon, which typically happens in the so-called order-disorder transitions, including magnet, superconductor, and superfluid. Okay. So theoretically, one simple model for us to describe the critical phenomenon is this famous Eisen model. Here, I'm just showing an example of Eisen model in 3D, where you can consider some classical spins, which can take values either plus or minus one, which are sitting at the sides of a cubic lattice. And they are interacting with its nearest neighbor with this ferromagnetic interactions. And this model actually describes the magnet that we are familiar with. And in particular, if you consider the situation that the temperature is very low, that the system would just favor to stay in its lowest energy state, which will correspond to that all the spins pointing to the same direction, either up or down, and that describes the magnet. And this actually breaks the symmetries, the Z2 symmetries of the Eisen model, and we get what we call ordered phase. And when you increase the temperature, you will have a competition between the energy and the entropy, and then And eventually, the entropy will win, and you end up with a disordered phase where the Z2 symmetry is recovered. And in between, you get this famous Ising transitions. And there, the critical phenomenon has a number of characteristic features, including that the physical quantities, like specific heat, will diverge. So here is just an example that what the specific heat would look like. In particular, you can see that at the critical temperature, it gets diverged. And how it diverges is also correspond to the universal physics. For example, this exponent is some critical exponent. And you also get like power law correlation functions. And the system are indeed infinitely correlated, meaning that no matter how far they are away, they are always talking to each other. And they are also very sensitive to small perturbations. And another feature worth highlighting is the system is scale invariant, which is a reminiscent of scale invariance in fractals. Okay, and one very remarkable fact about critical phenomenon is the so-called universality. So in general, we can characterize critical points using a set of universal numbers, which I just mentioned. For example, they really describe, for example, how the physical quantities diverge at the critical point. So and the remarkable thing is that some similarly different systems actually can belong to the same universality with exactly same critical exponents. So I have mentioned this liquid gas transition and Ising transitions. It turns out that they are in the same universality as well as the textbook quantum field series, Phi-4 theory, at three dimensions. So this is really remarkable that it brings the possibility that to understand different phenomena using a very simple and unified formulas or models. And this actually goes far beyond physics. Indeed, critical phenomenon exists almost everywhere. Here I'm just giving you a number of examples that, for example, you can find critical phenomenon in stock market, you can find it in flocks of birds, and also in our brain and social network, earthquake, and also deep learning. And what really makes this possible is the universality, right? And among those, the thing that attracts me most is this so-called critical brain hypothesis, was hypothesizing that the human brain are actually very close to a critical point, and the closer it to the critical point, the better performance you will get, the brain will have. So that means probably we can get smarter by studying critical phenomena. All right, so back to physics. In the history, the study of critical phenomenon also gave birth to a number of very fundamentally important physics concepts and theories, including, for example, for the universality I have mentioned, and also renormalization group was inspired by studying Ising models, and also the conformal field series. And this this talk will be mainly focused on the conformal field series. The story of conformal field theory starts from Polyakov half a century ago, where he find that indeed for the 2D Ising transitions, where people knew the exact solution, and he find that indeed the scale invariance that I mentioned will be enhanced to the what we call the conformal invariance, namely that the system will be invariant under the conformal transformation. As we know, the conformal transformation is angle-preserving transformations that allows you to distort your space, right? And it looks like this. So Polyakov conjectured that this conformal symmetry actually will be also happen in many different phase transitions, including the 3D Ising transitions. And that gave the birth of the conformal field theories. And nowadays, the conformal field theory really becomes a very important a type of quantum field theories in many different fields in physics. Indeed, many people in the building are studying conformal field theories for many different reasons. So as I have explained, that in many slack max systems, like Eisen model, like liquid gas transition, you will get CFTs. And also, if you're interested in quantum matter, like myself, where CFT also plays a very important role, as you can get interesting quantum criticalities, as well as spin liquid, which are described by CFTs. And there are also ideas saying that maybe the CFT encodes the secret of quantum gravity, for example, through the so-called ADS-CFT duality. And if you are just interested in quantum field theories in general, CFTs also plays a role because they generically appears at the fixed point of RG, regardless the UV fixed point or IR fixed point. So I think I don't need to say much, really motivate you anymore about why CFTs are interesting and important to study. So there are a lot of fascinating properties about CFT. And one really fascinating and also challenging property of CFT is that they are strongly interacting, right? So in 2D, the situations becomes a little bit better, where many 2D CFTs are exactly solvable thanks to this seminal paper. But if you go to higher dimensions, like three dimensions, CFT are less well understood. And there are not that many methods available for you to really to use to understand the CFTs. So the popular method would be some, for example, perturbative RG computations. And you can also put it on a lattice, like this three-dimensional Eisen model, where then you do some Monte Carlo numerical simulations. Typically, that would be Monte Carlo simulations. And in recent 10 or 20 years, a very powerful method called conformal bootstrap was invented, which can also be used to provide a lot of valuable information about CFT. But still, the situation is not is not ideal, that we still need a very good method to understand our CFTs. And there are a lot of outstanding challenges. For example, you can just ask whether the phase transitions would generically have emergent conformal symmetry, right? We know that is the case for 2D Eisen and many other 2D phase transitions, but we don't really know whether that's true generically for many different types of transition. And once you have a CFT, you could ask what are the natures of the CFT, what are the landscape of CFTs, right? And you can also try to discover new types of critical phenomena in a CFT in nature, right? For example, our brain may be some CFT, be described by some CFT that we have never thought of, right? So to really answer those questions, we need powerful non-perturbative tools. And this talk will be about this. And in particular, we will take a condensed matter approach, where we will study some strongly interacting models, just like the Eisen models on the lattice, which realize the CFTs. And using that, we can understand many properties of CFTs. So the key in this story is conformal symmetry. And in particular, we want to make use of conformal symmetry to study CFTs. And just technically speaking, what we need to do is that we need to study some model defined on what we call conformally flat manifold. By conformally flat manifold, we mean some manifold that is conformally equivalent to the infinite space RD. And those manifold could be something like a sphere or cylinder geometry. This is SD minus 1 times R. And in particular, on this cylinder geometry, we will get a very nice property of safety that is called radial quantization, or state operator correspondence, which says that on this geometry, the way to think about the CFT is that we consider some quantum Hamiltonian defined on this sphere as d minus 1, and this r is really just our time direction. And then once we have this quantum Hamiltonian, the eigenstate, its eigenstate will be in one-to-one correspondence with CFT's scaling operators. And for example, the energy gaps will be proportional to what we call the scaling dimensions of the operators in CFT. Those scaling dimensions are just correspond to the critical exponents that I have brought up at the very beginning of this talk. So then once we have this realized, then the game becomes much, much simpler, that we just need to get energy gaps of the Hamiltonian, and then we get then we get those critical exponents. Okay, and that's really the power of the conformal symmetry. And people, of course, people know this for a while, and that we should make use of that radial quantization to study CFTs. And for 2D CFT, is actually very straightforward to do so. What you need to do is that you just put your system on a periodic chain, and then you diagonalize it. You can realize this radial quantization and make use of it. And people have done this for decades. And one of my favorite paper is done by Giffrey and when he was still at Parameter. Okay, if you go to higher dimensions, then the situation becomes much more challenging, because right now, then what you need to do is that you need to put a lattice on a sphere, right? But we know that the sphere has a curvature, right? Which means that you cannot fit any regular lattice on the sphere. So, and that was the challenging that in the past that people didn't quite try to make use of this radial quantization to study higher dimensional CFT. All right, so, and our recipe is that we don't try to discretize a sphere. Instead, we are trying to fuzzify a sphere. So formally, what we are going to consider is that we will make use a very important object in the what we call non-commutative geometry, that is this so-called fuzzy sphere. And then we will study a quantum mechanical model defined on this fuzzy sphere, which realizes the CFT of interest. And then we can make use of radial quantizations to study various properties of CFT. So in a few slides, I will introduce what this fuzzy sphere is and how to make use of it. But before that, let me actually just quickly show some results to get you excited. So as I said, what we need to do is that we want to study some quantum mechanical model defined on sphere. And then we diagonalize the Hamiltonian to get its energy spectrums and many other properties that related to CFT, right? And typically, those the accuracy or the the accuracy of this approach is controlled by how many degrees of freedom you have. For example, if you're simulating a lattice model, right? Ideally, you want to go to the thermodynamic limit, which contains, let's say, infinite number of sides. Then you can do in various numerical simulations to get information about CFT, right? And here is the results that we get with a Hamiltonian with just of just four spins, where the goal is to look at its energy spectrums and to relate it then with the CFT's scaling dimensions. And here is the results of the energy spectrum of only four spins, where we can compare it with the results from, for example, conformal bootstrap, where you can say that the numerical discrepancies between those two approaches are indeed very small. And given that it's a very, very small system size, and among those, we can indeed identify six different conformal primaries, as I show here. And also we can identify 11 conformal descendants, so where you can say the numerical discrepancies from the theoretical predictions is very small, right? To make it even more impressive, so we can compare the past studies, for example, for this famous Eisen model on a lattice. If you want to study that lattice Eisen model, and if you are able to simulate millions of spins using millions of CPU hours, in the past, people were only able to find three conformal primaries. But here, we are able to easily beat them with a model with four spins. I think this is really remarkable. So, and this really brings a new era for studying three-dimensional CFTs. Let me again just contrast it with the usual lattice models simulations. As I said, usually when you play with lattice models, you have to simulate thousands of millions of spins, which would take like millions of CPU hours. But if you use the fuzzy sphere, 10-ish spins is enough, and you can do it instantly on a laptop within half an hour. And using this fuzzy sphere approach, we can actually compute almost everything that we care about for a CFT. While using a lattice model simulations, you can get very limited information, as what I just highlighted in the last slide. For example, you don't get access to conformal symmetry, while the fuzzy sphere approach gives us a fingerprint of conformal symmetry. I think this approach is really game-changing, and that's why I'm super excited about this method. So I will, okay, so I think I can pause a little bit if there is any questions. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have, just to clarify, so, well, you mentioned a lattice on the sphere.
Yeah.
The idea is to put some quantum mechanical on those nodes, some quantum mechanical degrees of freedom, and in the continuum limit, you choose the quantum mechanical system such that in the continuum limit, you recover the CFT of interest.
Oh, you mean lattices? You put the lattice on sphere or our fuzzy sphere approach?
Well, you put a lattice, and I don't know which one it's referring to, if any.
So our fuzzy sphere approach is completely different. Yeah, it has nothing to do with it.
Was done before, maybe, or not?
Sorry?
That's what was done before, maybe, and there was an obstruction related to the curvature of the sphere?
Yeah, if you want to put the lattice on sphere. And there were not many efforts were trying to do that because people knew it won't work, right? But
okay.
Yeah, for us, we didn't try to put lattice on sphere. We just considered this non-commutative sphere.
Fair enough, right. An entirely different approach. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. Is there any way to see why curvature is an obstruction? Just need the lattice to be regular for some reason, but why or something like that was written.
I think it's related to OLA characteristic, right?
Huh?
It's related to this called the OLA characteristic, right? There, where you cannot have a regular lattice on sphere.
Yeah, why is that a problem?
You mean why you? So then that means that you need to put some defect on the sphere, right? If you want to put lattice there. And then those defects would destroy the CFT you want to study, right? At the best, you get some CFT with a lot of defects, right? It's yeah.
Okay.
All right. So let me go to the second part geometry side. I will introduce what is non-commutative geometry and what is fuzzy sphere. From the perspective of condensed matter theorist. So it's actually a very intuitive for physicists to understand what is non-commutative geometry. So it's actually just nothing but a generalization of quantum mechanics, that is the non-commutativity in phase space to the non-commutativity in real space, right? And you will not be too surprised that it was Heisenberg who originally came up with this idea. And the original motivation for him was to use this to cure the infamous UV divergence in quantum field theories. But he didn't write any paper on this. He wrote this idea in a letter to his former PhD student, Pius, and then this idea gets further propagated through Pauli and to Oppenheimer, and then it became a PhD project of Schneider, who was a student of Oppenheimer at that time, I think. And eventually, Schneider wrote the first paper about using this idea of non-commutative geometry to regularize quantum field theories. And later, the mathematical foundation of non-commutative geometry was developed by Alan Connors in 70s and 80s. So let me just give you some very rough intuition that why non-commutative geometry can help us to regularize a quantum field series. Again, we can compare it with the lattice regularizations, where you can get a good idea that why non-commutative geometry is helpful. So as you know, this famous lattice regularization by Wilson, that is you can use a discrete lattice to discretize your continuous space, and then you take the continuum limit that this lattice spacing goes to zero, that recovers this continuum limit. And the benefits of this lattice regularization is that it gives you a UV finite a way to write down a quantum field series. The downside is that you always play with a discrete space. There's no continuous space symmetry, and it's hard to fit different space like a curved space, in particular a sphere, which was our original motivation, right? And in contrast, this idea of fuzzy regularization is that you try to study some quantum field series defined on a non-commutative space. For example, in 2D, that means that the x and y gets non-commuting. And then due to the uncertainty principle that we are familiar with, we can conclude that this fuzzy regularization will also give us a UV finite space. The way to think about it is that you just imagine that now I'm throwing particles or quantum fields in this non-commutative space, right? Due to the uncertainty principle, right, each particle has to occupy a finite space, which is tied to this non-commutivity. And then eventually I'm only able to throw in a finite number of degrees of freedom, and that gives us a UV finite space. And the nice thing of it is that there's no rigid lattice, right? It's always a continuous space, and you can easily make it to fit other curved space like a sphere. And for this so-called fuzzy two sphere, the way to define it is that you require its three coordinates to follow the SO3 algebra. And it was originally proposed by John Model many years ago. Okay, so I hope that it gives you a rough idea that why this non-commutative geometry can help us to regularize a quantum field series. But it turns out that this nice idea may not be working if you just simply put a quantum field series in a non-commutative space. And indeed, people find that usually for such non-commutative field series, you will end up with a non-local theory with this very interesting phenomenon called UV-IR mixing, meaning that the the physics in the UV gets mixed with the IR, and in the end, you are not realizing the quantum field theory, the normal quantum field theory that we want to study at the beginning. So, and roughly speaking, the reason that you get UV-IR mixing is precisely because of this uncertainty principle, where due to which you cannot make sharp sense of position, and then it's very hard to write down a local theory. For those non-quantum field theories, you end up with some non-local theories, and in the end, you get the UV-IR mixing. So the key message is that although this fuzzy regularization is very interesting, but in the past, it was not successful as far as QFT was concerned. But there's still a number of very interesting motivations to study quantum field, non-commutative field theories in physics. Right? People have played with non-commutative Young-Mills and standard model, and also in string theory, there are motivations to study non-commutative field theories, and also in quantum gravity. So in those theories, you're kind of dealing with a non-local theory anyway, so then that's why non-commutative field theories may appear there. But what we are going to do is that we still want to study the normal quantum field theories, in particular conformal field theories using non-commutative geometry. And the inspiration that to achieve that was really coming from the condensed matter physics that we are familiar with, in particular this so-called quantum Hall effect, which is a cornerstone in modern condensed matter physics. So let me just remind you what is the quantum Hall effect. So I think everyone knows what is the classical Hall effect. That is, you consider a two-dimensional plane with electrons moving in it, and then you apply a magnetic field perpendicular to your two-dimensional plane, right? And then just due to the Lorentz force, you will get what we call conductivity or resistivity, meaning that if you just apply a voltage along, let's say, x direction, then you will get current along the y direction, right? That is a classical Hall effect that we learned in high school. And one feature of the classical Hall effect is that the Hall conductivity or resistivity will be proportional to the strength of magnetic field. And then what's remarkable for the quantum Hall effect is that if the temperature of the system is low enough, then you will find that those Hall resistivities actually form very robust plateaus, as shown here, right? And this is closely tied to the quantum effect of the electrons moving in the presence of magnetic field. And for this story, actually, it's also known that if you consider such a quantum mechanical system, you're actually dealing with a quantum mechanical system in the non-commutative geometry. People have recognized this for decades, and there were also a number of papers studying this. And all of them were from the perspective of using non-commutative geometry to understand the quantum Hall physics. So in this talk, what we will do is the other way around. We want to make use of quantum Hall physics to help us or to guide us about how to study quantum field theories on a non-commutative geometry. The eventual goal is really we want to put quantum field theories on a sphere geometry. All right, so let me first spend a few minutes explaining that why this quantum Hall system, more precisely, this particles moving in a strong magnetic field, why does it lead to a non-commutative geometry? So for this quantum mechanical system, you can describe it using this Lagrangian with this Fermilian kinetic term and also the minimal coupling between the particles and the magnetic field, right? And it's a very simple quantum mechanical problem that probably everyone has solved once when learning quantum mechanics in college. And the solution have several interesting features as the following. So firstly, you will find that the energy levels of those particles will form what we call Landau levels, which has a quantized energy, depends on the strength of magnetic field and also depends on which Landau level you are in. So you can label those Landau levels using integers running from 0 to infinity. And the other very important feature is that these Landau levels are completely flat, meaning that in the same Landau level, every single state have exactly same energy, right? So and then you also get a massive number of degeneracies of states at each level. And the degeneracy will be proportional to the strength of magnetic field as well as the area of my 2D space, right? And then if you do one thing that we called lowest Landau level projection, meaning that if you restrict your system into the lowest Landau level, then you will get the non-commutative geometry. It's very simple to understand it, that because the lowest Landau level is, the Landau level is completely flat, if you restrict your same system into the lowest Landau level, then the kinetic term just dropped out, right? And you left with this effective Lagrangian, and then you just work out the Fermilian canonical quantization. You will realize that the momentum gets locked with the space, precisely like px gets locked with y and vice versa. And then you are just following from the quantum mechanics, you will realize that now my space becomes non-commuting. So that is why the Landau level would lead to the non-commutative geometry. Okay, so and as I have motivated at the very beginning, the goal of us is to study, want to study some CFTs on the sphere, and more precisely this fuzzy sphere. So then what we need to do is that just modified the previous slides a little bit, that now I'm considering my two-dimensional space defined on sphere. And then I put a magnetic monopole in the center of the sphere, which plays a role of the magnetic field in the previous slides. So the magnetic monopole should be quantized flux should be 2 pi times s, right? And again, you can solve this single particle quantum mechanical problem. You will find quantized Landau levels, same as the previous slides. And the difference is that now the solutions of those Landau levels becomes a little bit more elegant, meaning that if you look at each Landau levels, the states actually forms an irreducible representation of SO3. More precisely, it will carry a spin n plus s representation of SO3. This n is just the label of Landau levels, s is the multiple flux we have, right? And specifically, if you look at the lowest Landau level, right, and it will just be in the spin s representation of SO3. Okay, and its wave function looks like this. Its wave function called monopole harmonics. As you can see, its form is actually much simpler than the spherical harmonics that we are familiar with. Okay, so now we also want to do what we call lowest Landau level projection. I want to restrict my system into the lowest Landau level. And as I said, this leads to non-commutative geometry. So here is another way to understand it. So let's say if you restrict your system into a lowest Landau level, you need to represent everything in your system using the states in the lowest Landau level. That means you have to replace your coordinates with an operator, acting on the space, Hilbert space of lowest standard level. And then you can get the operator in terms of a matrix form of by doing this integral, and it becomes a 2s plus 1 times 2s plus 1 matrix. And then you can easily verify that they actually follow the SO3 algebra. And just corresponds to the definition of fuzzy 2 sphere. And one important thing to worth highlight is that if you consider the infinite monopole flux limit, I will recover, then the coordinates will be commuting again, and then we will recover the normal sphere. And in our case, that corresponds to the continuum limit. There, I get an ordinary commuting sphere. All right, so.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Yinshan?
Yeah.
Thank you. So I have two questions. Maybe they are opposite to each other. So maybe the very first one is, using this, could you also do the Ising model on the torus, on in a R2? After all, you could always put this magnetic field, right, and get... is it crucial to go to the sphere? I understand we might want to go to the sphere, but could you
we can do it on torus.
I see.
But R2, you know, it's infinite space. So yeah, in conceptually you can do it, but in practice you cannot put it in a computer.
I see. But for the purpose of extracting dimensions and three-point functions, you could also do it on the torus, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me ask now my other question. So I think I asked you once and you already told me, but I forgot. So the basic physical intuition, if I understand correctly, is that you put a bunch of fermions that in the ground state, they more or less occupy the sphere homogeneously. And therefore, they dynamically form this lattice. Is this intuition correct, more or less?
They are homogeneously on a sphere, but I don't know whether I should say they form lattice.
Yeah, they are not stuck. Of course, they move a little bit and so on. But my question is whether it's really crucial to have this magnetic field, or whether we could we have some model where I just put fermions on the sphere, then by definition I have SO3 symmetry, and then I put some repulsion between them or something instead of a magnetic field, and they would then occupy the sphere homogeneously because of repulsion and not because of some fuzzy something. Is this possible, or am I missing something basic?
Well, you can write down such a model, but the difficulty is that that model will have infinite dimensional Hilbert space, right? So then again, yeah, you can. It's hard to play with it. The key is that this non-commutative geometry give us a finite Hilbert space.
Because you stay in the first Landau level.
Yeah. It's a way for you to regularize things, right? Otherwise, you always have like UV divergent system to play with.
And just one more thing. So you mentioned this well-known fact that there is this UV-IR mixing, and I've heard it many times, but I don't know exactly how it works and why this issue is there. Can you just say a little bit more what this IR-UV mixing, how do we see it mathematically, and why your regularization does not have this problem?
I don't think I can provide a short answer for that. Maybe people in the audience can. I know, like John Mayer and Rob has studied non-commutative field theory in the past.
It's uncertainty principle.
Sorry.
It's uncertainty principle. So.
Yeah. That's my interpretation. Yeah. But I don't say that is something that has to happen, but just.
No, I think it has to happen.
Well. Yeah, I don't know.
You're on a sphere, so.
Yeah, but. It could depend on the details, like how do you write down the interactions, or you modify the quantum field series a little bit.
I understood that, okay, this uncertainty principle, I understood the basic idea that it's not to say where points are, but then you say this problem, for you don't have this problem. Is it because when the spin goes to infinity, your non-commutativity h bar goes to zero, or it's more subtle than this?
The things it doesn't happen here, I think, is because we are not putting quantum field theories on the non-commutative geometry. Right? We study a quantum mechanical model, which is very different from quantum field theories. Yeah. But I think there may be a way to also avoid UVI mixing, even if you put a quantum field theory on non-commutative geometry. Then, but I don't know the right recipe. My guess would be that you need to modify the interactions a little bit and so on. Yeah, we can talk later.
Just one more question about this, just because I'm for my curiosity. Why is it called mixing? For me, I just see uncertainty principle tells you it's very hard to define at short distances where the particles are. Why does it have a big effect on the IR? Probably it's something obvious, but I don't see it right away.
It's like when you compute the correlation functions, then the UV scale is still there when you take the continuum limit. Right? That's why it's called UVI mixing.
I suppose Yoma's answer was pertinent for that, but I don't know if he could hear it. Maybe he couldn't hear it before.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So, any other question? All right. So, let me go to the last part. Let me just give you a quick recap. The physical motivation for us is to really find a UV finite realization of 3D CFTs on the this geometry S2 times R. And then the curves, the fact that the sphere is curved motivates us to think about a fuzzy sphere, or more precise, more generally speaking, non-commutative geometry. And on the other side that indeed people in the past has pursued the idea of non-commutative field theories, a quantum field theories on non-commutative geometry. But there people find the very novel properties like non-locality and UVI mixing. We know that the lowest standard level physics is closely related to the non-commutative geometry. What I'm going to do is that to put those two things together. So as I have said several times, so what we are going to do is that we want to consider some quantum mechanical model that realizes this 3D CFT. So it's very similar to the usual lattice model that people have played in the past. Here is an example of this. Again, this Ising model, a quantum Ising model defined on a square lattice, where the idea of to build such model is that you have a lattice and then you put some degrees of freedom, like spin 1/2 on each side, and then you write down some Hamiltonians. And for quantum Ising model, the Hamiltonian looks like this. So you get nearest neighbor Ising-Ising interactions, and you have a transverse field. So if the field strength is very small, then obviously the ground state will be, I have all the spins pointing to the up direction or the down directions that spontaneously break the Z2 symmetry. And if I have very strong magnetic field, it will polarize the spin and recover the Z2 symmetry. And in between, there will be a 2 plus 1D quantum Ising transitions, which correspond to the Ising CFT, right? And that is a Fermilian story. And then for us, then what we the quantum mechanical model that we will play with will be the particles moving on a sphere in the presence of a magnetic monopole, right? So then the model you can write down typically it looks like this. I have a kinetic term describing just the how the interactions between the particles like fermions with my gauge field, and I have two-body interaction terms like Coulomb interaction or some other like short-range interactions describe how the particles interact with each other, right? And then the key is that we can simply make this model to be a local model, right, by choosing a local interactions. We don't need to worry about non-locality and so on. which is a very serious issue for non-commutative field theory. And then we can just choose to tune the form of interactions, which may realize that there's some 2 plus 1D CFTs that we want to study. So for that, it's very similar to the you realize the CFTs in a lattice model. Right? So that is the basic idea. OK, so now let me just show the model that we write down for realizing 2 plus 1D Eisen transitions. So the first term is just a kinetic term, and then the key is that the interactions. So specifically, here what we are considering are some non-relativistic fermions with an isospin degree of freedom. This isospin has nothing to do with my sphere rotations or has nothing to do with my monopoles. And this isospin can take either up and down, and that eventually becomes the Eisen Z2 symmetries for the Eisen CFTs. So then using those fermionic operators, we can write down spin operators just by inserting the Pauli matrix. So those density operators actually just play the role of the Eisen spin operators like sigma z or sigma x in the lattice Eisen model. And then we can write down a model looks very similar to the quantum Eisen model on the lattice, where I have this Eisen spin interactions and also a transverse field, right? And this U is some form of interactions that we can choose. So here we choose it to be a delta potential and Laplacian delta, right? That is the Hamiltonian we want to study, and a key step that is that we will use what we call lowest standard level projection, meaning that I will restrict my system into the lowest standard level. And this is always mathematically valid if we consider a situation that the gap between my lowest standard level and the higher lambda levels is much larger than my interactions, right? And in practice, that's just two independent scale that I can choose arbitrarily. So then we just do this lowest standard level projection that is rewrite my fermion operators in terms of operators defined on the lowest standard level, right? And in practice, that is very straightforward to do so. Then and then we end up with model defined on the lowest standard level. Yeah.
Could you use some principle to fix the potential? I mean, are these interactions, I mean, if you do a scale transformation or energy flow, will you generate other things that are important? Or?
Yeah, that's a good question. We haven't thought about that.
So this is just like engineered by you that you pick these ones?
Yeah.
For the better?
Yeah.
Do you have to do some tuning or not?
We have to do some tuning. But in practice, maybe by including more and more interactions, you can make it behave better and better. That's something that we are playing with right now. So this interaction, you can just think it as, for example, on a lattice, it's an analog of on-site interactions and first neighbor interactions, right? And of course, you are free to add, let's say, third neighbor interactions, fourth neighbor interactions, and so on. That's in principle, it can on the yeah.
Are these the only relevant operators that you can write down?
So it's a quantum mechanical model in the UV,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then there's no relevant or irrelevant.
No,
yeah.
If you do a scale transformation, you're going to generate, you can integrate that.
Yeah.
So the question is, in that sense, are these the only important ones for you?
No. But in the end, we know that we study Eisen CFT, right? It only has one relevant direction. Perturbation, right? Then, yeah, we just need to tune one parameter to realize Eisen transitions. Yeah. All right. So, to make you understand better about what this fuzzy sphere model look like, again, we can compare it with the lattice model, right? As I said, in some sense, it's pretty similar, that is a quantum mechanical model built on some finite Hilbert space. Eventually, you want to take Hilbert space to infinity. So on lattice model, I have a latticide. My degree of freedom lives on this latticide. For example, it can be a quantum spin 1/2. Well, in contrast, in this fuzzy sphere model, we build our Hilbert space in this Landau level space. In some sense, that's it's very similar to you build a Hilbert space on the moment in the momentum space, in angular momentum space. So then, and specifically here, we will have 2s plus 1 Landau orbitals that they form an SO3 spin S representations. And then on each orbitals, we can have 4 states, right? Like I can choose to occupy 1 fermions or 2 fermions, or I can choose not to occupy fermions. That's my Hilbert space, right? And then you can write down the, and then you can think of the ordered phase and disordered phase, right, corresponding to the ferromagnet and paramagnet, right? For ordered phase on lattice, you just have all the spins on lattice pointing up or pointing down. The disordered phase, you just superpose those together, right? And then on fuzzy sphere, those two phases are also very simple, that the ordered phase will correspond to that on each orbital. I'm occupying 1 electrons precisely, and then its iso spin points to up or down, and that corresponds to ordered phase, and disordered phase will again be superposed them together, right? And then you can, for this quantizing model, right, we have some Hamiltonians, while for the fuzzy sphere models, we also have some Hamiltonians, but which is much, much more complicated that you cannot even say it here. So then let's take a closer look on the fuzzy sphere model, and it's, yeah, you can think it as some Feynman model with 2s plus 1 site. And the key is that those sites form SO3 representations, and the continuum limit corresponds to that. You take the S goes to infinity. As I explained, that gives you a commutative sphere. And then the Hamiltonian looks like this. I have like this Ising-Ising interactions now written in a much more complicated form. And the key is that this is a form. So this interaction involves 3J symbols because the model is SO3 invariant, right? The second term is a transverse term, transverse field term, which tunes through the transitions. OK.
Sorry, can I ask a quick question here?
Yeah.
So in the model I had in mind, you tell me if I'm wrong. So you would not put any spin. You would just put electrons. So these spherical harmonics would be usual spherical harmonics. There would be no S. And then you say the Hilbert space is infinite. So basically, I would truncate up to some maximum spin normally.
Yeah.
Would that obviously work worse than this fuzzy stuff?
So if you do that, then you are basically doing quantum field theory on sphere, right? You have some field, and then you expand it in spherical harmonics. You do a truncation, and you push your truncation into
A sphere. But the SO3 symmetry is manifest, and my question is whether the numerics would be worse or better than in your case.
I think no one really tried that, but one thing I can see is in that treatment, the Hilbert space is much, much larger than our Hilbert space. Yeah, I would bet that that approach will work much worse than ours, but that's just a bet. All right.
Why would it be bigger, the Hilbert space? It depends on how much spins you put, right? You truncate up to some maximum spin.
Yeah, you truncate up to some maximal spin. One way to say this is it's a bit technical. So in our case, right, Hilbert space has 2s plus 1 site, right? And then the angular momentum accessible actually runs from 0 to 2s, right? So it's kind of like we use, we only use spin S representation that enables the access of the angular momentum running from 0 to 2s, right? But in your approach, you need to use angular momentum running from 0. Literally, you need to use angular momentum running from 0 to 2s to represent your Hilbert space. Right? Here, we just choose, somehow we are able to just make use of the largest angular momentum, which enables the full access to the angular momentum from 0 to 2s. Yeah, I think it's a bit technical. You can talk later if you're interested. All right, so that is the Hamiltonian that we have for this 2+1D isomodel on the sphere, fuzzy sphere. And as you can see, is that you can easily appreciate that it's much, much more complicated than a usual lattice isomodel, right? And that is the price we have to pay because, it's very hard to study a quantum mechanical model that's isom CFTs on a sphere, right? So we really add a lot of ingredients to make this happen, and there's no surprise that we end up with a much more complicated model. So, but the real surprise is that in the end, it works much, much better than the usual lattice model. As I said, that the key is that we want to study this so-called state operator correspondence, and then once we have this quantum Hamiltonians on a sphere, we can just diagonalize it. Then we get all the scaling dimensions and so on. So this is the results that for 4 electrons, I have already shown that it works really remarkably great, given that it's a incredibly small Hilbert space. And then we can, if you go to a slightly larger Hilbert space, we are able to identify much more primary operators with higher accuracy. And we can also say the emergent conformal symmetries by identifying the conformal conformal structures between the primary and descendants. You can say the gradient are really great, but there are some discrepancies for high level states, and that comes from some perturbations of some irrelevant operators. Those discrepancies are also universal. You can correct them based on the conformal perturbation. So, and we can also compute the OP coefficients, a lot of OP coefficients, which goes beyond what conformal bootstrap is capable of doing. And we can also compute, for example, correlators, like four-point correlators. And one thing worth really highlighting is that here, the correlators, as well as many other observables, we can compute are actually continuous functions, right? Not like a lattice model. If you want to compute correlators, you just get a table of discrete numbers. Here we get a continuous functions of my space or crossing ratios, and that is really a manifestation that we are dealing with intrinsically continuous systems, not a discrete system. That's really a very interesting aspect of this non-commutative or fuzzy regularization. Okay, we can also compute this so-called F functions, and we can study conformal defect. And we can also study gauge theories on the fuzzy sphere. I don't have time to go through them. Let me say a bit like what are the really exciting future directions that we can explore using this approach. The first direction is that just use it as a numerical tool to solve many open problems that in CFTs and in QFTs that we care about, but there was no good way of dealing with. So for example, we can try to solve the problem of conformal window of critical gauge series in 3 dimensions. We can study CFTs that find the temperature, like the the higher dimensional version of Kadi formula, we can study various properties about conformal defect, we can study quantum chaos, we can explore the landscape of CFTs and probably find new CFTs. Right? We can also generalize it to a higher dimension and so on. There are a lot of things we can do. And another even more exciting direction is that to understand, right, why it works so well, right? I think as you have seen that it works much better than it should be, right? With four spins, we are able to already beat usual lattice models with millions of spins, right? There might be some very deep reason that makes it work so well, right? So I think I don't quite know the answer, but I think it might be related to the idea of Heisenberg that maybe non-commutative geometry is a right way for us to regularize our quantum field series, and the recipe is hidden in our approach, or maybe that three-dimensional CFTs or higher dimensional, or even higher dimensional CFTs has some hidden structure that we don't know, and this hidden structure is captured by this fuzzy sphere regularization, and that's why it works so well. And so I think those are really very exciting directions that I myself are very excited to explore in the future. So let me just wrap up. So I have introduced what is critical phenomenon and in particular what is CFT. And I should emphasize again that that's really a cornerstone in physics, and it also represents a lot of outstanding challenges and opportunities in modern physics. And here, by making use of non-commutative geometry and the quantum Hall physics, we propose a scheme that we call the fuzzy sphere regularization to study 3D CFTs. And this fuzzy sphere regularization demonstrates unreasonably effectiveness for study 3D CFTs. I think it implies some deep connection between CFT, QFT, and also non-commutative field geometry. Let me end up here.
Are there any questions from the students? No questions from the students? Maybe
a very naive one, like why higher dimensions? Is it possible?
Yeah.
Not only 4D CFT, but I don't know what the classification there are, if there's any knowledge.
Yeah, it's indeed it's pretty straightforward. So yeah, first of all, as you can see, the key is that we make use of those lambda levels, right? And you probably know that the lambda level is closely tied to, let's say, Chern class, right? Chern number, and that works for any even plus one dimensions, like 4 plus 1, 6 plus 1, and so on. So then we can directly adapt this construction to study 5D CFT, 7D CFT, 9D CFT, and so on, right? And then to the even space-time dimensional CFT, the way to do it is that you can start with a higher dimension and then compactify it. Let me just give you a simple example about how to do it for 1 plus 1D. Right? We start with our fuzzy 2 sphere, and now what you do is that you tune the bulk of my CFT, like my north sphere and hemisphere and southern hemisphere to some gapped state, but at the equator, I'm tuning it to some gapless CFT, right? So then I realize this at the equator, right? So you can just generalize this idea to 4D CFT, 6D CFT, right? Conceptually, it's very straightforward.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's open the floor for general questions from Dominic.
Do you have an idea which CFTs can be realized in low standard level? Is there any fundamental limitation to that?
That's a good question, and indeed, that's some question I would always want to ask you. I believe there are some anomaly associated on this fuzzy sphere, and then this anomaly will be obstructions for certain CFTs. Right? But you know that I won't really call it I should say it in this way. So one thing we need to understand is like for what's the anomaly on fuzzy sphere, right? And then once we understand it, we can just know that, let's say, for a given CFT with certain anomaly, what's the right UV setup to realize it on fuzzy sphere, right? Just like that is just like the spin one. That is a model where you have LSM anomaly, then you want it match with the IR anomaly of the CFT. And so far, I don't think no one understand what is anomaly of on the fuzzy sphere. Yeah. Or maybe it's not anomaly, it's something else. Right? Yeah. Nati Cyberg always complained that we condensed matter people associate everything to anomaly. But sometimes it's not precisely to whom the anomaly, could be some other obstructions.
Okay. Any more questions?
Yeah, I have a simple one. Is there a version of this story in one dimension, one plus one, or this is just what you said in the very beginning, what Ghibli has done?
For lattice model, right? If you just concerned with the radio quantization, then you just study a lattice model on periodic chain, right? Then you get radio quantization as well. But you can also play with fuzzy circle which I just explained, right? You can compactify fuzzy two sphere into its equator, and then you can also play with that.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I missed. I could not hear. Okay. Good. Yeah. I see.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. So if there are no more questions, well, let's thank Yincheng again.